just collaborating with other people too and seeing how they're leveraging AI. I think that's been kind of eye-opening for me. Like, things that I maybe wouldn't have done, like, or maybe things I was sort of reticent to do, an insecurity, like we shouldn't touch that. That's like, that's a sacred cow, right? And now there are no sacred cows, really. Like, there's ways that we can, leverage AI in some aspect in some of those.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Welcome to Defender Fridays, everybody. This is a slightly different one because we have a pretty special guest. But, here's the usual pitch. Defender Fridays, we're just trying to make the circle bigger of having discussions with interesting people in interesting topics that all kind of relate to defensive security. So it's not slides. It's really meant to be a discussion. So feel free to jump in. But today we've got Ken with us. Ken, do you want to do a quick intro?
Yeah, howdy folks. Ken Weston here. I work at Lima Charlie. I'm a solutions engineer, but I've been in the industry for about 2 decades now. Used to have a startup where I used to track criminals and do some interesting things there. Been working with SIM and EDR for most of my career. And I'm excited to talk to you guys a little bit about my journey through AI, some of the things that I've learned. I had sort of this, I call them beach thoughts, because it's like I look out here on the coast, I walk my dog, we go like these 5 mile walks, and I have these sort of weird thoughts, sort of epiphanies. And this one I was thinking about a lot, like how very similar to kind of the hero's journey. I'm not sure if you folks have ever heard of Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey. I'm sort of a liberal arts nerd, so I really like kind of the mythology and things like that, is this sort of idea of this sort of shared narrative, right, across all these different myths that the hero sort of goes through this sort of same pattern, right, in all these different stories. And I found there's a real similarity kind of in AI adoption, at least how I've perceived it and how I adopted it. And I thought it was a really great way to also kind of explain AI and how I think organizations, particularly in cybersecurity, how they can adopt it. And I think particularly when we start looking at like skepticism and things like that in particular, I think it really kind of rings true. And I think it's a great way to also explain this to, maybe leaders, people that maybe don't have the technical aspects of AI and understand it completely. And I think this is kind of a good sort of paradigm to discuss it.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. I'm my curiosity is piqued. So yeah, go for
can
it.
Can I share like one graphic? I had a bunch of slides. I'm working on some slides because I'm actually working on a talk on this, but I actually kind of fed it into AI and it created a really kind of cool graphic and did a good job explaining it. So let me see if I can share here.
Yeah. Mind if you don't have permission, I'll make you a host. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just host disabled attendee screen sharing.
All right, 1 sec. There you go.
All right. There we go. Cool. Cool. So this will kind of help kind of as I explain this too. So you guys can all see that. Cool. So, I mean, kind of where it all starts is sort of the ordinary world, right? Where, we're at home, right? This is before anything, bad happens. But, we have our traditional tooling, right? We have firewalls. We have all these like security plumbing that we try to do, our CI, DC. We do all this stuff, sec DevOps and everything, data pipeline. And then you have all these different like disparate tools, whether it's, a SIM, an EDR, like all these different things, right? And then we kind of talk about the call to adventure, right? Where, well, like it's really not working, right? It takes a lot of work for us to do this. We have to keep hiring more and more people. And then the attacks are actually getting more sophisticated and the attackers themselves are starting to leverage AI, right? Leveraging automation and things like that. And so initially, I think like a lot of us had this refusal to the call. Like AI, like we've kind of been burned by this before. A lot of us have. We like I think particularly when machine learning came about. When I was working for I won't say the name, a SIM vendor, and I remember they had this tool. It was a UEBA tool, and they were marketing it as this thing where replace your security team. Right? That's how it was. They were actually going to market with. You don't need an analyst and things like that. Well, I would go on site with customers that bought this tool, and I would find that they didn't have some of the basics. They were getting alerts from this UEBA tool about a particular system, but no one knew where the hell it was. They didn't know what, like, they could map the IP. It was in this one data center. No one knew who owned the application or anything like that. They didn't even focus on the fundamentals. They went and bought this like AI tool, thinking it's going to magically solve all their security problems, but they didn't do the basics around asset inventory and things like that. Things that we see like when the CIS like top 20 now like the top 18, right? Those are some of the fundamentals that we still need to do as humans, right? We need to make sure that those are taken care of. And I think like there was this sort of skepticism, and I think a lot of people got burned by that. And I think we saw a lot of that at Black Hat RSA over the last 10 years, as the sort of AI, we're going to replace it, and like no one really believed it. And I think with now we've sort of changed that model, right? Where we now have these tools, where particularly with LLMs in particular, where it's still sort of a mechanical Turk, right? It's still not like AGI is not really intelligent, right? It's based off of prior works, and it's predictive, right? So I think that's where I started learning more about how other people were leveraging AI. I'm lucky to have friends who are a lot smarter than me, who are showing me how they were using it, particularly when using AI to write deterministic content, right? AI itself, like with the LLMs, is non-deterministic, so it's sort of unreliable outcomes sometimes. You can send the same prompt and you'll get different results, right? Slightly different. Skills help a lot with that, leveraging that to provide more context and rails. But when it comes to other things, it's a little bit more difficult. So when I saw that, I was like, I started using it to write detections. Like, and I was like, this is like, holy crap, this is like a lot easier, right? And it actually started giving me creative ideas where, like, hey, I go out, there's this particular incident, there's some IOCs in this article, write some detections and test it. And then we created a workshop around this as well. And it actually accelerated like detection engineering, the whole process of research and things, where you actually have something to start with. Now, I wouldn't like automatically just, let AI go write those detections and deploy them to production, right? I created an org, right, that was testing, and then I even had it like make sure that like, okay, review these, test these rules, maybe tune them with false positives and things like that. And then when I'm ready, then I can leverage like our infrastructure as code to then, copy that over to a production org, right, when I'm ready for it. And like cloud ops and things like that too. I think these sort of different cases kind of allowed me to kind of cross that threshold to see how like these tools can be utilized in a way that's can be somewhat responsible, right? You still need to make sure like when we get into like the test allies and enemies, where we need to make sure that those get tuned. We also need to have good analysts, right? We're not going to replace the security analysts. We need people that really know their shit to be training these AIs and models. Sorry for my language, but yeah, so that's really kind of critically important for us. And then on the other side, we have enemies who are also using AI, right? We're starting to see this. They're even like targeting AI, right? So we see that with prompt injections and things of that nature. And so it actually creates a whole new realm of cybersecurity, right? We're not going to be replacing the analysts. Actually, it's just changing how we do our jobs, and we need to start looking at AI as a tool and not something that's going to be replacing us. The approach to the innermost cave, that's a little bit of an abstraction, but probably not the best one. But yeah, but like we're never going to get to the point where like we're fully dependent on AI. I don't think we should be. I think we still use an AI to help us write content and help the humans, right? And do what it does best, but we still need the humans to be able to do the work. And then sort of getting into that, the real, the seizing of the sword, right? This is where we start to see actual benefits of AI. Like we're seeing this with our customers. It's crazy how fast we've been seeing it, like the adoption. Once people start leveraging it, like in our hands-on workshops, when people start to actually understand it, like you can explain this all day, but you have to get people behind the keyboard and actually using it for them to fully understand it. And that's also raises some challenge, right? Because a lot of security analysts aren't necessarily developers, and then you're asking them to write, use this thing called Claude code and things like that. So they usually have to develop it and learn some new skills along the way as well. And then, yeah, I think they're at the resurrection. This is where we start to see this sort of human AI symbiosis where we're actually working together. And then, return with the elixir. This is where we actually get feedback and we can bring that back into the organization. And this is an iterative process. And I think, especially with AI, the way it's going to be rapidly increasing, the way the models are increasing, right? This sort of loop that we need to keep, continuous loop that we're going to have to keep going through, I think is critical. That was a long kind of rant, but I hope that kind of explains like kind of what I was talking about in terms of AI and like the hero's journey.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting way to put into words what I would go and say what most of us that have played more with AI have kind of lived, right? Like this, you said it very specifically. Like you have to put your hands on it to go and start to get the feeling. That's really cool. Yeah. A thing it made me so it's, this is like AI is non-deterministic. I just noticed a little thing in that graph. I look at the arrow and it's going the wrong way, and I thought that's a
Exactly.
very
Good point.
poetic way of like, yeah, that's exactly right,
Like everything's perfect except for one thing, right? Because it doesn't
right.
understand context, right? Like, and humans have that. So that's critically important. But then, like you can go in and you would teach it, hey, like, hey, when you do the arrow, it needs to go the other direction, right? It needs to be sequential, right? And but you can teach it, right? You can still teach machines that. Like, it's like a junior analyst or an intern, I think. That's kind of how I look at AI quite a bit. You it can do a lot of work, you can trust to do things, but you really need to review its work.
A very, very excited, overeager, overconfident intern with infinite time. Well, as infinite as your extra usage budget.
Tokens, infinite tokens.
It made me feel recently. I was thinking about this and about the imperfection. And actually, I'm curious, Jeff. It sounds like you're also like digging quite a bit into that. But what my experience has been is that I see there's kind of a mapping. When you're talking around things like aviation, things like that, there's the concept of the Swiss cheese, like incident, and Swiss cheese, where when all of the holes kind of overlap, that's when you have the incident going through and it's a problem. But otherwise, like generally speaking, even though Swiss cheese is full of holes, you can't see through it. And I was finding that AI, will make those silly mistakes, but because it's also non-deterministic, AI will usually find its own mistakes as well. And so I found that kind of, as a habit now, if I'm looking at code, I always just, make it write a bit of code and then immediately make it code review its own code. And it finds the majority of things there, right? So I feel like I'm kind of like learning this Swiss cheese approach of like making sure that you end up catching everything. Is that what you guys have also experienced?
Yeah, I think so. I think also we need to remember that AI lies sometimes, right? So we can't take, what it says at face value, especially if it doesn't understand the context. But I think I feel like sometimes that's our responsibility as well. Like it's like a parent to a child, right? We didn't teach it like the right way, right? We need
And
to make sure
much like a parent with a child,
that.
well, maybe this isn't a good analogy, because when I see like the model has straight up lied about what it did in a thing, I am very disappointed in that model. But unlike a child, sometimes I will like, well, I was testing out Qwen 3.6, but it lied to me directly, so it's dead to me now. Don't do that with your children, even if they lie to you.
You can't trade your children in for another model.
Does that do you find that that happens often? This is the big problem, right? All of this is completely anecdotal for everybody. So I recently I found like l straight up lying. I think it's been a while for me.
For the normal frontier models for Gemini, for Claude Sonnet, Claude Opus, and for OpenAI 5.5.5.4, it is pretty darn rare. for GLM 5.1, like the Z.AI, like some of the other models. Remember, they are trained to be useful. They are trained to come up with an answer. They are literally incentivized to do so as part of their training. So you can make an argument that kind of the naive training environment is totally biased towards, yes, I solved the problem for you, regardless of whether it actually did or not.
How do you train AI to have humility? Like to say, no, I don't know. Like I've never had it like saying like I can't
Yeah.
do that or whatever. It always tries to do
The
something.
general rule is if you can make an evaluation for it, it can then be part of your training workflow. So if you bring up plenty of situations where it does not have what it needs to solve the problem, then you can have the training be for admitting that, evaluated by some other model, and have that be part of the training process. So when we talk about like saturating a benchmark, like generally the benchmarks are part of the training in practice. And if there isn't a benchmark for it, then benchmaxing is going to be a thing where it's going to try to solve all the problems given. And if that's always coming up with some answer, even if sometimes it's lying, then that's what it will do.
It's also interesting to look at that problem with kind of like an even bigger aperture onto how do we do hu problem solving as humans. And, I think about it like the number of times where I was trying to do something and I didn't know how to do it, but I started doing a thing, and in the process of doing this, I found new information, and that led me to go in that conclusion. And so I start to think like, how would I even begin to train that into a model of like, well, it's okay if you don't know, and you could tell me you don't know, but that's gonna be bad for me as a human to have that experience. So I want you to try, but not try too much. Then, it gets real philosophical
I mean,
quickly.
it totally anecdotally, it's okay to have an escape hatch. Like when I'm telling AI to make a plan for something, explicitly say it's okay to ask questions. It may be that some of what I am telling you now is incorrect. So please test your theories before you propose something and test my statements before you determine them to be true. Like set up the environment so there's room for testing your assumptions. That is anecdotal, but it's worked for me. So we trade prompts and approaches like we trade Pokemon cards.
I'm kind of curious, do you folks use like different models like to keep them honest, like leveraging like one model like and then run it by another model, like to see it, like if it agrees, like anything like that?
I do often indirectly, but the pipeline I talked about a couple of weeks ago is different models for different stages. So there's a little bit of double checking. And if one model successfully claims to make an exploit, then I'll use a different one, often Claude, to be the arbiter of that. No, seriously, you do the test yourself. Does this work? And give me the command so that I can see it working for myself.
Yeah, it's a really interesting pattern. And as Christoph in the chat also doing like Claude to Codex to Claude, and I feel like I mean it's the pattern in AI, I think, right? Where like people are kind of like on the edge trying to like wire things together. I'm kind of sitting back a little bit, hoping that. Much like when the models got what did they call it? Like reasoning, right? They layered reasoning in the model. I'm kind of waiting for them to go and layer, I don't know what you'd call it. It's like what's that concept again in law where like the lawyers kind of have to be against the other. It's like a position. I forget the specific like legal name for that, but I'm waiting for like that concept to get baked into those models so that the model challenges itself and ends up kind of like,
Yeah, I
getting
mean,
better.
Dash has an approach mentioned in chat there of explicitly say this is another model. It may be incorrect. It's pretty common now to have us talking to Jean-Francois, which we totally need to get on here, about having the plan that comes out in often case it might be from Claude, and then Codex will do the code review, saying like, "Hey, here's the plan." You tear it apart, and then it goes back to Claude for another round, and usually do see some improvement there. Just like a variety of opinions makes for a better process when it comes to working together in meetings and such.
Yeah, it's the complexity of that worries me. It's the like rigging stuff together that is not supposed to work together, and it's like I don't know. I hope they kind of manage to smooth that over. Of course, the big thing is much like reasoning, is that going to make the costs blow up even more than before, right? Like it's. Those are patches, I feel, around the problem that like it's really not AGI, and
We're having problems with the tokens. Solution: use more
more
tokens.
tokens.
Yeah,
And in
I
all
mean,
fairness, it
you see like
worked.
the swarms of review, the ultra review from Claude, which is like, well, do the same thing 20 times and take the most popular result. It's not quite that, but it gets the right opinion of like, well, let's just use more tokens, and maybe there's going to be more intelligence in there somewhere.
That's right, that's
Yeah,
right.
I kind of worry, like with, you know, as people become more reliant on AI, that they're going to really start to jack up the prices at some point, right?
I
Because
think we are already seeing that
yeah, like first they're losing money,
Codex
then they have
price
to
per
make
token
more money.
going up, and Claude tokenizer being like 40% more tokens for the same inputs. So in practice, you're using a lot more usage quite quickly. Gemini tamping down their usage limits. They are getting more expensive, and yet tokens are the cheapest they will ever be right now because they're VC funded. You're not spending Google's dollars when you use Gemini. Well, for things that aren't Google, I should say. You're not using Anthropic's money when you're using Claude Code. You're using VC funding, save for
Yeah.
OpenAI.
Yeah, I wonder if like that's going to drive more people to do more internal models, like build their own things, especially like the Chinese models and things like that. They're
Yeah, the
pretty
Claude
dang
3.6
good.
and such. They're
Yeah.
3 to 6 months behind is somewhat the consensus, which is pretty impressive, honestly. And it kind of sets a floor for what the, or I guess a ceiling for the price per token, what it can be if we know that there's competition with open weights models that anyone can host. So the few frontier models can't really jack it up that much beyond what it you could get somewhere else.
Yeah, maybe a hot take, but I think it's probably going to stay roughly at where it is in the future because I think there's two escape hatches here that one of them has got to win at some point. Meaning, Google is doing some interesting stuff with their TPUs, which I think is a different architecture than the ultra generalist NVIDIA architecture. So like more efficient chipsets. And the other one is, it feels like, every now and then I read a paper about LLMs, and there's still so much innovation that's happening around how people are thinking about like the training and distilling models. And so there's just so much there, like in this dark forest, like in the fog of war, that, people will come up with these different ways. And I think it won't go cheaper because the AI companies have realized like people will pay for this at this price point. So I don't think they have much incentive to go cheaper. But
Yeah.
if they can get better models at that price point, you know what I mean?
I was seeing a comment on Hacker News about that, like, hey, we're doing contract review for our law firm and having a triage via frontier model. So I don't care if it costs 30 times as much if it's 1% better. Compared to the cost of the negotiation, it's nothing. So price insensitivity as about as much as it gets there for some use cases that will always exist. So if a frontier model is slightly more frontier than the others, there's quite the premium to be had.
Yeah, and God knows there's plenty of room for that in security operations. I'm kind of curious, like if like I feel like in some ways I have a very different view of the AI space because I don't, I'm mostly on the software development side of things and kind of operation and less cybersecurity operations day in, day out. Jeff, do you do cybersecurity operations, or do you also kind of mostly do like vulnerability and like different types of kind of
despite what I was on here a couple of weeks ago, like vulnerability analysis, exploitation, it's not generally my thing. I came from the defense world and still talk with them a fair bit, including some like regular SOC work. But most of my day-to-day is more offensive.
Oh, I see. I see. Offensive side of things. Anybody in like
We're
in
on
here? I'm
Offender
kind of
Fridays,
curious.
right?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, am I like, I don't know if I'm wrong or if I'm right, but I would love to kind of hear from somebody that also is doing a ton of security operations, defender side, because I suspect that there's some overlap, but there's also like big mix of things that just don't overlap at all. So if you're in the chat and you fit in that, please do like raise your hand or something. Based on this hero's journey, this kind of cycle of like how things have been going, Ken, what do you think is the future? Like, what do you think is, are we going to expand this hero's journey to include kind of other steps as we move forward? Or do you think, like, for you, it's like I've done it and now, I'm kind of like ready to like adopt AI always? Or how do you see yourself in that in the future?
Yeah, I think continuing. I think actually just collaborating with other people too and seeing how they're leveraging AI. I think that's been kind of eye-opening for me. Like, things that I maybe wouldn't have done, like, or maybe things I was sort of reticent to do, like AI, because I'm sort of trained like, in security, like we shouldn't touch that. That's like, that's a sacred cow, right? And now there are no sacred cows really. Like, there's ways that we can leverage AI in some aspect in some of those. I've been using it a lot for research, as well as using it to teach me, like even about different tools and things like that. And it's awesome. It's a great teacher, right? So I think that's great. And then I think as the models, again, as they improve, and I think as we see other use cases, then I think it's just going to keep compounding. I think you can't be on the sidelines anymore. I think if you fail to adopt AI in some aspect, at least understand it, you're going to be left behind. I think particularly security analysts, you have to use AI in some aspect. You're going to need to use it in some of your tools. I teach college, and we have a cybersecurity minor, but we also have an AI minor, right? So AI and cybersecurity are sort of going hand in hand, and I'm starting to see that in a lot of the courses as well. Either you're going to have to learn how to defend the AI tools that are being deployed in your organization, and you're going to also have to leverage AI to do your work as well. But because there's going to be so much, like so many different tools now, like there's so many different data sources and threats that you need to be able to manage, and there's no way that you can do it all with just your traditional security team, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forget, was it you or Jeff that kind of jokingly said it's like trading Pokemon cards, like the prompts. I feel like that's a big aspect of it at this point in time. So having those discussions and like comparing notes with people is probably how I also learn the most, I think. And it's expected, right? And I would say if you're in cybersecurity, my expectation is that you're probably already somebody that's like interested in, new technologies and new things that how to put that, making things do the things that they're not intended to.
Hundred
And right.
percent.
And that fits, like that's the thing for me, right? Like that's the point in time that AI is at. So I think it's super cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think just it's exciting actually. Like I think it's, especially in cybersecurity, I think people like they you know the knee-jerk reaction was sort of resistance. But I think again, as people start to use these tools, it's actually a heck of a lot of fun. Like, it actually makes your job fun again. It's all these mundane tasks can be handled by the AI, and I think it frees you up to actually be creative, to focus on more creative solutions, I think. And yeah, I think it's really more of a tool of empowerment versus a tool of replacing.
That's right. For all of the super cool use cases sometimes we talk about, the big ones that make the most difference are the really mundane, just like waste of time, tools of like, yeah, in the past, it's such a waste of time. In the past, maybe I would have spent an hour building a shell script for that. And now, like, just the AI kind of does it for me, and I don't have to figure it out. Like, what's the command line for doing this thing and that thing? Just,
I think enabling a lot of side quests that you weren't otherwise able to do, so things that you didn't have the time for, or I got to figure out this new program, like just getting started. It's always easier to edit than it is to write from whole cloth, and that first draft can come out pretty quick.
Yeah, I started using it first just to write regular expressions, right? Because I don't know, I feel like regex is a war crime, but letting AI do it, right? Like, it's just and it does a better job of it too. Like, it usually does it more efficiently than I would. So yeah, it's great.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, thanks, Ken, for kind of sharing and being the catalyst for this great discussion. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Ken at Lima Charlie. I'm also K Weston on Twitter or X or whatever the heck they call it. So yeah, happy to reach out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody. And we will see you at the next Defender Fridays. Have a good weekend.
See y'all.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.